every time I speak, the number one question anybody asks me is, what should my child be studying? And I'll tell you, the WASX, the Wharton Accenture Skills Index, provides an empirically based answer to that question.
We are ingrained to think about roles and titles. So this notion of just even at a basic level, thinking about skills and specifically the skill evolution for your business. What skills you have today may not be the skills you need for the future. And how are you embarking on that journey?
Hello, and welcome to Season 5 of Where AI Works, conversations at the intersection of AI and industry, brought to you by Wharton in collaboration with Accenture. My name is Matthew Bidwell. I'm a professor of management, the faculty co-director of the Wharton People Analytics Initiative, and faculty director of Wharton's CHRO program. It's my pleasure to be your host for this season of the podcast, as we tackle the big questions shaping AI's role in the world of business today and into the future. It's our goal to cut through the noise, to deliver actionable insights for business leaders by combining cutting-edge research with real-world case studies. Things are changing fast, so let's get started. On this season's premiere episode, I'm excited to tackle a topic that's top of mind for a lot of business leaders right now: how artificial intelligence is transforming skill demand, hiring practices, workforce preparation. The labor market is changing fast, faster than employers, workers, and yes, even us educators can keep up. Job titles, they don't really reflect how work's getting done, as AI is accelerating the shift towards a skills-based economy. And that's exposing a growing gap between what workers claim they can do and what organizations truly value. Wharton recently teamed up with Accenture to study this in detail. And the result is what we call the Wharton Accenture Skills Index. It's a recurring empirical benchmark designed to measure which skills are oversupplied or undersupplied and how AI is reshaping the demand for skills over time. How, indeed, these patterns also vary across industries and roles. So to learn more about this report and discuss the findings in greater detail, it's my pleasure to introduce two of the leaders who are behind it. James Crowley is Global Products Industry Practices Chair at Accenture, as well as a member of the company's Global Management Committee. Eric Bradlow, my colleague, is Vice Dean of AI and Analytics and Chair of the Marketing Department here at Wharton. James, Eric, welcome both to Where AI Works.
Thank you, Matthew.
Thank you.
So before we dive into the report, I was wondering if you could just share a little bit about yourselves and how you're thinking about AI these days. James, why don't you go first?
Sure, happy to jump in. So first of all, relative to who I am at Accenture, I lead our products industries globally. That includes a set of three industries: our life sciences industries, our industrials industries, and our consumer industries. From my perspective, this is an exciting time for our clients, their businesses, and employees. And I'm excited to talk about the Skills Index from the perspective of what we see going on in the industry. There's a lot. One of our big messages is that AI and the dominant value from AI will come from driving growth, not just productivity. Recently, we talked to a number of C-suite leaders, and almost 78% of them believe AI is going to be most important in growth. What that really translates into is that we need AI impacting core KPIs, not just productivity metrics. At the same time, I would just say that scaling AI and using AI broadly is not easy. It's hard. And there's different pinch points and bottlenecks, and working through those is really important, whether that's adoption and employee adoption or even the data foundation. So we're excited about the opportunity, but it's not without, you know, the hurdles of change, as with anything. And that's what we're focused on.
Definitely. Yeah. I think the rollout is proving a real challenge. I also very pleased to hear what you say about the opportunities for growth, because I know when you look at surveys, I think particularly here in the US, your average employee is terrified, right? And so hearing that this is not just about taking jobs and replacing people, it's creating new services, creating new opportunities. That's a really important message. Eric?
Well, I think as Wharton's Vice Dean of AI and Analytics, it's kind of a tautological question about how I feel about AI. In some ways, it's been interesting, Matthew, because, you know, like maybe even longer than you, I've been at Wharton for 30 years. And 20 years ago, I kind of had the revelation, which is when I started all of this, that big data science, in other words, the more granular data that companies were going to be able to measure, was going to be a big deal tied towards driving growth. 10 years ago, not the generative AI we have now, but AI more generally, being able to ingest video data, rich data, was going to be a big deal. So we actually started a center on AI here at Wharton 10 years ago when a lot of people kind of jumped in 2 or 3 years ago. Like James, I'm extremely optimistic that AI is not only going to improve productivity, but I think about the things that parts of my job that I enjoy a little bit less, well, AI can replace a bunch of that. I think about all the things I just cannot do or couldn't do before that AI supports me in doing. So I think, not only do I think the Wharton Accenture Skills Index is crucial to understanding what our students are going to do and what we should be teaching, but I think it's crucially important that businesses understand where AI is going. So I'm extraordinarily excited about this, and I'm happy to tell you as well about what we're doing at Wharton AI and Analytics to try to make all of this happen from the educational side.
That's excellent. It's great to be around a couple of optimists. I guess it's why I left the UK. But let's dive in and just kind of get a sense, particularly, I'd love to hear more about this report, because I think, you know, we want to focus on what this means about work, what this means about both how we pursue our careers, but also particularly how we think about managing the workforce, what it's going to mean for the people involved. So maybe you could start just by telling our listeners a little bit about what you did to create the report. We're not going for the 30-minute kind of methodological appendix, but the 60-second kind of, what's this based on that you're drawing these conclusions for?
Sure. I'm happy to jump in there. You know, just stepping back, we started on a journey with Eric and WAI AI in just exploring, you know, the broader implications of AI on enterprises and businesses. And one of the themes that immediately emerged that we were very like-minded around was the impacts on talent. We wanted to step back and really look at this from a different lens, in particular, a skill lens. So at a top line level, we took very simply 150 million people profiles and compared them to 100 million job postings anchored to the Bureau of Labor Statistics and some of their data since 2022. We also had to do some work and use AI to group skills because it's quite a complicated landscape of over 33,000 skills. So we created skill clusters, about 2,000 of them. And really, we analyzed the supply and demand of those and what that looked like in the marketplace. So we treated that as a supply and demand, a skill market. And we also then extrapolated that into wage impacts using machine learning. So there were three core findings to the research. The first is a demand finding, and that there's generally a demand for more specialized skills. Employers are increasingly demanding and rewarding what we would call specialized and even execution-oriented skills, and we can get into what that means, but that over general skills. So that was finding number one. Finding number two was this notion of role-specific economics. So really what we're saying there is we're not saying any skill is good or bad, but certainly in the context of a specific role, some skills are valued more than others. And some skills actually in the context of a role can actually be devalued, if you will, and negatively impact salary or pay. And then lastly, we applied a sort of a time series to the data because we wanted to really look at what is the impact of AI when AI came on the scene and what is happening. And clearly we saw that AI was shifting which skills matter and the demand for those. Again, more demand for judgment skills, coordination, compliance, very domain-specific skills versus generalist skills and routine tasks. And we expect that to continue to evolve over time and move faster. In a nutshell, hopefully that's the study.
That's a rich set of findings. I want to come back. I think the piece that you were talking about, this kind of gap where we don't have enough skills is a really important piece that I want to come to in a minute. One of the things that really stood out to me, though, about what you're talking about was this kind of move from role-based to skills-based, and this comes out multiple times during the report. Yeah, I'd love to get a sense from both of you about both, you know, unpack a little bit more what this means and how should employers be thinking about this?
So maybe I'll just start with a few things. I'll answer your question, and then I want to build a couple things on what James just said as well. First, if you think about the way most organizations are designed, the classic org structure, they have titles and roles. So you might have a president, you might have a bunch of senior vice presidents, you might have a bunch of managers, et cetera, et cetera. Of course, you might still in the future have those titles, but they don't actually say what those people do or what skills those people need to have to effectively do their job. And so to me, the insight from the Wharton side was when Accenture, when the work we were doing even prior to the Wharton Accenture Skills Index focused entirely on what is the workflow of someone's job? What are the skills they need to do the job? What parts can artificial intelligence replace in someone's workflow? Which parts do they enhance? I literally remember the meeting where James and other people from Accenture, Ken, Selene, et cetera, myself and the Wharton AI and Analytics team, we said, oh my God, there's an opportunity here to look at the demand and supply from the different sides of the market. And from the Wharton side, remember, I know you know this, Matthew, because it's the kind of research you do and I do. We're the empirical school. It's not like Accenture or Wharton just went into their office and said, let's think about what the skills gap is. That's not what we did. It's just the opposite of what we did. And the other part I'll talk about as well, besides the fact I thought that the big insight from the Accenture side was the entire shift from a role-based organization to a skill-based organization, was the machine learning work that James talked about, the clustering work of skills that James talked about. This is the beauty, Matthew. We had students doing a lot of the work on this project. So what that means is, at the same time, Accenture can learn something, Wharton can learn something, we educate students. That's always our model. And students have tremendous capabilities in machine learning. And we try to prepare our students for the workforce. Every time I speak, the number one question any parent, alum, newspaper, anybody asks me is, what should my child be studying? And I'll tell you, the WASX, the Wharton Accenture Skills Index, provides an empirically based answer to that question. And that's why I think, you know, this is a massive shift forward, if nothing else, just the shift from roles and jobs driving an organization to skills driving an organization.
So James, maybe you could tell me a little bit more about that. If you're an employer, if you're looking at your organization and the way you manage people particularly, what are some of the things you might be thinking about in practical terms to move more towards skill-based management?
I think first it starts with acknowledging the shift and frankly, just thinking about skills. It's that easy. It's not, I think to Eric's point, like we are ingrained to think about roles and titles. We represent our roles in resumes. We organize and show placemats with roles. So this notion of just even at a basic level, thinking about skills and specifically the skill evolution for your business. What skills you have today may not be the skills you need for the future. How are you embarking on that journey? That then leads me to then, how are you going to enable that journey if I'm an employer? We have a what we call a pulse of change survey where we look, you know, we talk to C-suite leaders, 20 countries, 20 industries. So it's quite pervasive and quite global. And basically 23% would cite that if they could increase the availability of talent, skilled talent, new skilled talent, and training, that that would be the most beneficial in accelerating their AI journey. And about one in two are really prioritizing learning as they move forward in light of that. So I think it's acknowledging this skill economy, thinking about the skills that matter most to you now and particularly in the future to enable the business and drive value in the business. And then lastly, figuring out how do you embed that and enable that with your workforce in different ways.
Laser focus on the skills that people have and what we can do to make sure they have the right ones for what we need in the world we're seeing. Eric.
I was going to add one thing to what James said. You know, I'm currently teaching the MBA core and I talk to students about this. I'm not only impressed in what large language models and AI can do today, but I even tell them, think about how quickly you can learn something that you didn't know before. And the way I've always thought about it, you know, in the companies I've run, the companies I've owned, the companies I've started, the companies I've worked for, I always have a favorite expression, which to me promotes AI, which is you don't invest in the intercept, you invest in the slope. I do not care what you know now. I care how quickly you can learn. And to me, AI is a tool that enables you to learn quickly. If I need to know how to run a financial analysis, before I had to learn not only the basics, which I still need to do, but I needed to do maybe how to code, how to do a macro. Well, now all of that part of the skill is taken away. So to me, anybody that loves learning, Matthew, isn't this what we do as educators? Don't you describe yourself as a lifelong learner? I think that's what AI is going to enable. As a matter of fact, it should be seen as an opportunity for most employees. You mean I can learn something different and move into a different skill position at my company? I think that's a great opportunity for most employees.
Yeah, it certainly is. And I agree also, I think AI is both demanding that we learn new skills, but it makes it easier in many cases. get that kind of individualized tutoring to fill in the details and so on. I want to talk a little bit about the gap. So James, as you started us off, you were talking about kind of the findings, and one of the big ones that comes out of this report is if you look at the skills that employees are listing that they have, and then compare that on an economy-wide basis to the skills that employers are saying that they want, there's a gap there. Tell me a little bit more, what are the kind of skills that are oversupplied, if you like, and particularly, what are the skills that we think there are not enough of out there?
Sure. The easiest way to think about it is when you think about oversupply, it's generalist skills. So a couple of the ones at the top of that list include leadership, and leadership generically or undefined. Communication, something that gets claimed by everyone, not always validated or not always specific around type of communication. Teamwork, collaboration, general problem solving. Those are the things that get highlighted frequently and we would say oversupplied. And then when you go to what we would call undersupplied or undersignaling at some level in the profiles, you would see things or not see things like domain-specific skills, expertise from industry. So for me, things like pharmaceutical expertise, retail expertise, auto expertise, those types of things at that level of depth. Orchestration, so how you work with AI and how you use AI. Validation, we believe that in the future world, Eric alluded to, the speed at which you can learn and the speed at which you can do things is changing quickly. So some of what we're moving to is more, how do we validate? How do we check? How do we challenge? And how do you build that into prompting, and how do you make it real? So those are a couple of examples. The one point I would want to make too, though, is that even the oversupplied skills, from my perspective, are still going to be important. I just think your ability to contextualize them and really bring specificity to them will be paramount. You know, one of the things we're now saying a lot is context is king in AI. I think context will be king in skills. I think that's how, you know, as an employee, you need to think about it.
So we need those general capabilities, but they're not enough. There needs to be that context, domain knowledge that really brings them to life.
Exactly.
The only thing I would add to this is we have to be only a tiny bit careful. And you said it carefully, Matthew, but just so our listeners think of it carefully. It could well be that a number of students or people looking for jobs have these skills. These are their stated skills. So there's a couple theses that could be out there. One is people have deeply technical skills, but in the this much space on my resume, I'm talking about the skills that historically have been the differentiators, but now may not be as differentiating. That's number one. Second, we as educators, we better take this seriously. Last time I checked, we're a business school. We're a pre-professional school, which means we're preparing people for a professional job. If it's true that there is a skills gap, which I do believe there is, there's at least a stated skills gap, then we have to start training people in the skills they need to take these jobs. And then to James's other point, who's going to certify this? And that's a very interesting thing. Like, will the Wharton School be in the certification business? You know, Matthew, you know, over the years you've been at Wharton, I've been at Wharton, Exec Ed, other entities have talked about having certification exams, certification tests, etc. I don't know that Wharton's going to get into that business, but somebody will. Look, I will make a prediction right here on this show right now. Someone is going to take the Wharton Accenture Skills Index and turn it into a business model. Someone is going to say, Crowley and Bradlow said, these are the skills gaps and companies need this. We're going to find a way to be the blue housekeeping or blue ribbon seal of approval that you have this skill, and we're going to start selling it.
I would wholeheartedly agree, Eric. I also think, to put some emphasis on your first point, this notion that individuals need to take accountability back to, you know, the learning and the pace of learning. And almost at any point in time, you know, you should be able to identify what are the 3 to 5 new skills you're actively building and learning around. And it's something we're going through right now at Accenture, is thinking about how do we create the space for that with our employees, but also how do we, to your point, check it? How do we reward it? Those become critical questions, because once it becomes part of the behavior and part of the reward system, then it starts to get ingrained. And that's when you get like the snowball effect, and it really becomes a behavioral change versus kind of episodically and kind of almost in a linear way. And it's not continuous. And frankly, it's not fast enough for the way the environment is changing.
So I can imagine some of the listeners out there might be saying, okay, I get it. I need to build new skills. 3 sounds like a nice number. Which skills? How should I think about figuring out what are the ones that would make most sense for me to add? So James, you talked about kind of in your organization, any thoughts for employees or indeed their employers about guidance on how we think about what are the high value things to be going after?
The first premise of this analysis is that journey needs to be highly personalized and highly dependent on what you're being asked to do. So I don't think there's one answer, but in the context of technology work, one of the things we are talking a lot about is certain aspects of technology work, coding, testing, et cetera. AI has had a big impact on and will continue to have a big impact on. But what that doesn't take away is it doesn't take away the need for architecture skills, how you're testing code against business requirements, how you're driving more business relevance into the technology and how you interface with the business. The data, the semantic knowledge, that whole space is being transformed with AI, and we see a whole influx of skills and people needed in that. So those would be some I would highlight. And I would also say, I go back to something Eric said, I just think problem solving, and even if you just step back and think about how AI works and prompting and this notion of just asking good questions and continuing to refine questions and prompts and going deeper and deeper and wider and contextualizing it, that's a skill and that will be increasingly important.
So it feels like more broadly, particularly at this point in time, maybe a little less emphasis on how to do things and a little more on some of these kind of strategic questions of what do we do next?
Exactly.
What's the plan? How do we build out this strategy?
I think, Matthew, you brought out something really important. Think about historically what all of us could do. I don't know, do some analysis. Oh, well, I'll hand this off to a junior analyst to do for me because that's not my job or skill set to do. Except now you can actually do it. So now what ends up happening is who can ask the more, as you pointed out, Matthew, the more strategic question. And the thing I always say is you need depth of expertise. Matter of fact, this is what I do in my MBA class. I always take all the cases that I do. I ingest them into a large language model. I ask the questions that I ask them for assignments. And then I say, let's all read this. Does this make any sense to you? And so the person that's going to be able to make the most sense out of it is a couple things. First, to James's point, you're going to need domain-specific knowledge. If you have no contextual knowledge about that specific industry or area, it's very hard to know. The analysis looks right. It smells right. I read it. But who knows if it's right? The second thing is, let's say it's wrong in some way. Okay, all right, so no one said you have to go with the first answer it gives you. What question do you now use to modify that answer? What do you do to dive deeper into that answer? And also, probably the most important thing, what makes it so that the company can actually use it as a decision support tool? I see those skills being more important than before, not less important.
Just to close this off in terms of kind of, you know, with AI and the skills, we've talked a little bit about how AI is useful for training skills. We've talked a little bit about kind of some of these challenges with certifying skills. I think particularly as I think about moving towards more skills-based structures, it's very easy to figure out what jobs we have in our organization. Who knows what skills are there? Are you seeing organizations successfully using AI to get more of a handle on this question of where are our skills? What are our needs? And so on.
It is a complex question to kind of come up with your own taxonomy for the skills you need. And there is no standard in my knowledge that exists. Now, I think through the analysis that we've done with Wharton and Eric's entire team and the students, we've actually started the formation through narrowing 33,000 skills down to 2,000, you start to create a protocol skill index that you can use as a starting point for how you think about that. Whether that's right for you, your organization or not, I think this is where companies need to agree and have some level of taxonomy and some way of at least identifying the skills that they have today and the skills that they need for the future. But at the same time, I think those skill definitions are going to evolve quite a bit, and it's probably going to be highly personalized to each enterprise at some level. I think companies are moving there, but it is, Matthew, one of the biggest questions we get, especially from CHROs, because they can look at roles. They could tell you how many roles they have, how many research analysts they have, or how many clinicians they have in whatever business they're in. But they really don't have a good sense of where their skill surpluses and deficits are. And that would be the first step in my mind for an organization is starting to think about what the skills-based economy means to them.
So Matthew, I have sort of three answers to that question. One comes from, I know it's amazing that I have even one, but I have three. The first one comes from the job I had prior to coming to the Wharton School, which is at the Educational Testing Service. Let me say why it's related. Let's imagine I give Matthew either a multiple choice question or some long form problem to solve. The entire field of educational testing has studied what skills does that person need to have to answer this question. Oh, so they need to know the following rule in geometry. Oh, they need to know this in algebra. Oh, matter of fact, that's how curriculum are set and it's how questions are constructed. So first, it might be possible to actually look at the workflow, which I know Accenture spends a lot of time thinking about, and saying what skills are needed for that. That's kind of answer number one. Answer number two, I know it's going to sound strange, but maybe we should ask AI what skills are needed to do a particular task. I'm pretty sure it could do a pretty good job of saying you need to know this and this to solve this problem. The third thing I would say is I'm sort of a believer in the long run in efficient markets. And here's what I mean. Let's say a client hires somebody into a particular role. I'm assuming they're hiring someone into that role because they think the person has the skills to do that role. So another way to think about it is the market is going to decide what skills are needed from which jobs in the long run. We'll see that match occurring in the long run. Now, of course, we've already identified a gap. We've already identified that roles and skills don't match. So notice I said in the long run. But I could imagine a number of ways, none of which are probably satisfying, but a number of ways to try to answer what is a very difficult problem. As James said, it's easy to count roles. It's hard to measure and just count skills.
I mean, I think this is an area where I'm getting more optimistic. It was starting to feel like the cold fusion of human resource management. Like over the last decade, I've lost count of the number of conversations I've had with people like, no, we've come up with this great idea where we're going to measure the skills of people had. And I never heard anybody say, we had this great idea and now we have great measures of the skills that our people have. But coming back to what you were saying earlier, Eric, about the potential of AI to structure unstructured data, I think now the capacity to go back, to analyze workflows, to analyze communications, all of those sorts of things, and to use those to really extract what are the skills people are using in their day-to-day job. I think we do have opportunities that we didn't have in the past to learn about that. Maybe we'll look ahead a little bit. We've talked about some of this, I think, already, but I'm kind of curious if we think about the different stakeholders. We've talked about for employers, think about skills, start thinking about work in terms of skills. Any other big picture piece of advice of how they make sure their workforce is prepared for what's coming?
Good question. And we sort of covered the surplus deficit and just the diagnosis associated with that as an enterprise. I do think there are other actions that organizations can take, most importantly, signaling to employees that this matters and is meaningful. If I look at that Pulse survey, one of the other things that we found is 32% of leaders believe that roles will change this year and the skills associated with those roles. So they recognize and acknowledge that there's change. That's only 12% of employees believe that. So there's a gap in how leaders feel like roles and skills will evolve versus employees. And I think leaders need to help employees kind of embrace this journey. And the way they do that will be by embedding it in core processes like how do you hire? How do you recruit? How do you emphasize skills in your learning? How do you create a self-learning culture? How do you reward around it? So it just needs to get kind of embedded into the bloodstream of some of the talent processes, so that you can kind of create a movement, if you will, with your employees on this front.
The only thing I would add to what James said is we found actually in a different report that we're doing as well, which is where we look at AI adoption. So Wharton does an AI adoption report too, is that James is 100% right. Top level C-suite 100% sees it. Entry level people see it. It's interesting that the mid-level manager is less enthusiastic and less excited about AI. There's this donut hole sitting in the middle, which is actually quite interesting. I even noticed the difference between when I teach undergraduates. I know it doesn't seem like a big deal, Matthew, but you kind of know the difference between like a 20-year-old studying something and a 28-year-old studying something. The 20-year-olds today are all into AI. They can't, I mean, They're using AI on their phones. They're using AI for every task possible. Someone that's already been in the workforce, and maybe James is right, maybe the roles-based responsibility that they lived with for 5 years has made them think a little bit differently. So I think what a lot of companies are doing is it's going to be the first-time employees that are going to have a lot to say about the way in which work is done at various jobs. And then the mid-level manager is going to have to recognize that the way that they manage people is going to change. But I think there is this donut hole. I think first-time, early, like right out of college employees are going to treat AI and its opportunity a lot different than, if you like, the mid-level manager. And definitely the C-suite knows it needs to be there.
Just building on that point, I think it's so important. I mean, if that movement started with first-time employees around skills, I mean, imagine that when first-time employees start showing up, characterizing their experiences contextually as skills, not as I did this internship here and I did this internship here. Here are the five skills that I'm really good at and what I can bring to your organization. 70% of how they communicated their experience was oriented around that versus kind of how it looks today. I think that alone could start a massive movement in this direction.
It could. At the same time, I mean, I think one of the things a lot of people have been commenting on is those young people, they're the ones who are having the hardest times finding jobs. And so, it is on the one hand, we expect these young AI natives to come in and revolutionize our organizations. We're just not hiring them.
Yeah.
At some point, we're going to have to kind of square that particular circle. So that is probably a great note on which to end. Obviously, I could go on asking questions for another hour or so, but I think I might test your patience as well as that of our listeners. So we'll bring it to a close there, but it's been a really insightful conversation. Great start to the season, the podcast. Eric, James, thank you so much for sharing your time and expertise with us here on Where AI Works.
Thank you, Matthew. Thank you, Eric.
Thank you.
So what did I take away from my conversation with Eric and James? A few things, maybe things we already know, that the labor market is changing. AI is a profound transformation of the way we work, and that kind of transformation is obviously going to shift the labor market. I really like this idea of thinking about roles and skills. I think it's important because AI has shifted the value of so many skills. There are many things that we used to think were really important to know that now we can just turn to our computer to do for us. But as those skills become less important, it means we need to spend more time in our roles thinking about others, moving towards the more strategic aspects of our roles as well. And so as our jobs change, the kind of skills that we need are going to change. And that means paying much more attention to them. I think a big piece that comes out of this as well, when we start talking about skills and the transformation of work, is willingness to change. A lot of these changes are good, taking out many of the dull pieces of work, but at the same time, change is always challenging. Sometimes it can be easier for all of us to go on doing the things that we always used to do, rather than shifting, rather than trying to figure out how to do things we can't do. And so whether it's as business leaders or as employees or yes, as educators, I think being ready for AI means taking a long, hard look at what we can do today, understanding what skills we're going to need for our job and figuring out how to invest in them. But I think with those investments, we can build really effective jobs for everybody and really effective careers that we can enjoy for the future. So that brings us to the end of our season premiere. Thank you so much for listening. Please follow us so you don't miss an episode. Be sure to tune in next time when I'll be talking to Donna Morris, who's an Executive Vice President and Chief People Officer at Walmart. This has been Where AI Works, conversations at the intersection of AI and industry, brought to you by Wharton in collaboration with Accenture. I'm Matthew Bidwell. Thank you. Goodbye.